Welcome to Island Watch, where each episode we explore an island by watching a TV show or a movie. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale. Hi, I'm Dave Zarg.
And I'm Gemma Voss. And yes, welcome to Island Watch, the podcast that transports you to islands all over the world. If you're looking for a getaway, you're in the right place. This week, the Good Ship Island Watch visits the island of Guernsey in the English Channel via the movie The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
All aboard! Here we are sailing along through the English Channel, just off the coast of France, heading towards Guernsey. We're going to take a moment to get acquainted with the island first, and then we'll dive into the movie.
Guernsey is a tiny place, really, just 65 square kilometers. The capital is St. Peter Port, and it's a town of about 20,000 people. We're sailing into the harbor now.
Guernsey is the second largest of the Channel Islands. It's about 50 kilometers off the coast of France, and about 60,000 people live on the island.
It's very close to France, but it's not a French island, right?
That's right. It's British, but it's not part of the United Kingdom.
Wait, it's not French, but it's not part of the UK.
Well, it's an interesting status held by Guernsey and Jersey, as well as the Isle of Man, which is in the Irish Sea. They're crown dependencies, directly connected to the monarchy. The Queen is the head of state, and the UK Parliament looks after some aspects of their international relations, but they are self-governing.
Okay, I did not know that. I knew that there were lots of wars between England and France over the centuries, and it made me wonder why the Channel Islands aren't French. Actually, I ran across a fun fact. You know Victor Hugo, the author of Les Miserables?
Yeah.
He actually lived in exile on Guernsey for 15 years, and he loved it there. He described the Channel Islands as bits of France that fell into the sea and were picked up by England.
Cool. For today's episode, we want to focus on the 20th century history. In June 1940, Guernsey and the other Channel Islands were occupied by German troops. In fact, they were the only British territory in Europe to be occupied during World War II. About a week before the invasion, the islanders had sent away most of the children by boat to England, but the remaining population was trapped, living under occupation until the very end of the war in 1945.
And that is when the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society story begins, with the Nazi occupation. Actually, I wanted to say a few words about the book that the movie is based on. They share the same big mouthful of a title, which I'm not going to attempt again right now. The book came out in 2008, and it's by an American author, Marianne Schaefer. Marianne visited London in 1976, and on a whim, she decided to pop down to Guernsey. Once she got there, though, there was a fog wrapped around the island so thick that no boats or planes could leave. And it's 1976, so of course she can't just whip out her phone to browse or do work on her laptop. So while she's waiting for the fog to lift, she goes into the bookstore in the airport and reads each and every book in the place. And that included a book called Jersey Under the Jackboot, and that was about the Nazi occupation of the Channel Islands. Over the years, her interest in Guernsey's occupation kept growing, and she was finally inspired to write the novel. But sadly, before she was able to complete the book, she became ill and passed away. But she had arranged for her niece, Annie Barrows, to finish the book for her.
That's really interesting. Well, the movie, it opens with a group of friends walking at night after curfew, and they get stopped by German troops. When the soldiers demand to know what they're up to, they, on the spot, come up with the lie that they've just been at a book club meeting. They have to give the name of the club, and they come up with the awkward Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
Because the Nazis kept everything official, their book club has to be registered and monitored, and so the friends really have no choice but to hastily form a real book club to meet every week from then on.
And they actually do create the Potato Peel Pie, which is exactly what the name suggests, and from what I hear, as awful as it sounds. There were food shortages on the island because the Germans confiscated all the livestock and much of the produce on the island.
We first meet the movie's main character, Julia Ashton, just after the war. She's a Londoner, an author, and she's been asked to write a feature for the Times Literary Supplement. She's looking for a subject, and by chance, she starts corresponding with one of the book club members. Fascinated by their story, she travels to Guernsey to find out more about the club and its members. Popcorn is great with a show, but sometimes I want to connect the snacks to the movie just that much more. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society calls for a special menu. We've gathered together recipes and other information for the foods featured in the show, but don't worry, we are lucky to have access these days to dishes you'll want to eat, and that likely won't include the potato peel pie, which apparently tastes like glue, but we're going to put the recipe there for you anyway.
Just head to our website at islandwatchpodcast.com for our picnic picks.
Watching this movie today is a different experience than seeing it in 2018 when it was first released. At this moment in 2021, we're still within the pandemic and lockdowns and quarantines. Vaccines are rolling out, thank goodness, but the feelings of being cut off from living life as we've been used to it, that has certain overlaps with the movie, and so it resonated more with me this time.
With me as well. When we first see Juliet, she's in London, and it's just months past the end of the war. It's so close, in fact, that when she's riding the bus and sees some workers busy outside a door on the street, she gasps.
Fresh paint! When was the last time you saw that?
Ah!
One might almost believe the war is really over.
It's a similar feeling we seem to be having. The story on the news right now is how anyone with any money is going to come roaring out of their place when they're able and spend, 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 because we will be able to use our money on all kinds of experiences again.
And that's the mood in 1946 London. It's joyful. It's raucous, and Juliet is well placed in this. She's young, she's a best-selling author, and she's looking to catch up on all the aspects of her life that have been put on hold. Sound familiar?
Sounds pretty good and pretty familiar, except for the best-selling author bit. But that energy of being open to new possibilities, that a person can do anything and fulfill their potential, yes.
Like most people who've lived through the war, Juliet has had loss and trauma, and she's now doing everything she can to move beyond that into her promising new chapter.
She has what they might have called at the time a charming suitor, a rich American named Mark, who has sent so many bouquets of roses to her bedsit that she could literally make floral wallpaper out of them. But there's something not quite meshing in Juliet's life, and she tries to talk about it with Mark one night when they're swanning it up at a big band nightclub.
Do you ever feel like we've emerged from a long black tunnel into a carnival?
Did you not like carnivals?
Yeah. After a long black tunnel, carnival's wonderful. Let's dance.
Back at her bedsit, there's a bit of mystery developing.
Given that it's 1946, snail mail is like email, text, and Instagram rolled into one, so getting at least a couple of letters in the Daily Post is the norm. And Juliet receives an intriguing letter from a stranger.
Dear Miss Ashton, my name is Dorsey Adams. I live on my farm on the island of Guernsey. I know of you because I have an old book, Selected Essays of Elia by Charles Snow, that has your name and address written inside.
I've read it many times. There wasn't much else to do here during the occupation, and Charles Lamb made me laugh.
Especially when he wrote about the roast pig.
I am part of a book club, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. We actually formed because we had to keep a roast pig secret from the Germans. So, I like Charles Lamb, which is why I'm writing to you. The Germans are gone now, but there are no bookshops left on Guernsey. I am looking for a copy of Charles Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare, which I understand he wrote for children. Could you send me the address of a bookshop in London? I hope not to trouble you. Dorsey Adams.
The writer in Juliet is, of course, intrigued, so she replies to Dawsey's letter, sending him the book he requested, but she asks for something in exchange. Specifically, she wants the answers to 3 questions.
Why did a roasted pig have to be kept a secret? How could a pig cause you to begin a literary society? And, most pressing of all, what is a potato peel pie?
Her curiosity is piqued. When Dawsey writes back with answers to her questions, it just stirs up more questions.
Dear Miss Ashton, thank you for finding me a copy of Mr. Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare, and even more for sending it as a gift. I am happy to settle this debt by answering your questions. A roast pig had to be kept a secret because the Germans took all our animals away in 1940 to feed their soldiers on the continent.
Well, there's one question down. Dawsey starts to shed light on questions 2 and 3 by writing Juliet a few of the details of life under the Nazi occupation. The same details, actually, that drew Marianne Schaefer to write the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, the novel.
They ordered me to grow potatoes. Food was already scarce by the first winter of the occupation. A proper meal was had only in memory, like our radios, which they'd taken. And the post, which they'd suspended, and the telegraph cables that they'd cut. We lived our lives in isolation.
That kind of isolation was obviously much more to bear than what we have now. How's the sailing today? If you're enjoying our podcast, we'd love you to give us a hand by rating and reviewing Island Watch on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And be sure to tell your friends about Island Watch. The director, Mike Newell, he's likely best known to you for his film 4 Weddings and a Funeral. He has a fairly light touch with this material, but the facts of how horrible a period this was are just below the surface.
Yes, that's true.
So back to the story. One thing leads to another, and Juliet sails to Guernsey, where she joins the reassembled book club for dinner on her first night there. She's so excited to meet the people that Dawsey's been describing to her in his letters. It's pretty plain. She has inklings that she's found her tribe. And even though the evening starts a bit stiffly, everyone has warmed up with homemade gin.
Which is a chaser for the potato peel pie that Juliet has requested as part of the dinner.
What a combo. Okay. There's been drinks, there's been good conversation, and Juliet's excitement about her plans bubble out.
Tell Mr. Ramsay I would love to get the recipe from you if I could.
She's mad drunk already.
It would be lovely to include in the article. People adore that sort of detail.
Article? What article?
Oh, forgive me. I've got ahead of myself. The Times has asked me to write an article on reading, and I'd like very much to write about you. All of you. The society. You painted such a vivid story in your letters.
You came to write about us?
It's for the London Times. I mean, only with all your permission, of course.
I'm sure there are more interesting subjects to write on.
Oh, no, but the story of your group and how it was formed, I'm sure that so many would find it as inspiring
as
that.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, no, I'm certain they would.
No, I'm sure we're not interested in inspiring the readers of the London Times. Thank you all the same.
I see, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to press, but I'd like to understand.
But how could you understand? And people wouldn't. I'm sorry you've come all this way for nothing.
Shut down.
Yes, it seems the resistance is definitely coming from a place much stronger than modesty or a humble nature. Juliet she's definitely stepped in it.
So her curiosity is in full force now, and she's unable to stop tugging at the threads of the mystery. But as we don't want to spoil anything, we're going to stop with the story and fill you in a little bit about the cast bringing this story to life.
If you like your British dramas, you'll recognize a few faces here, as 4 of the main cast also had roles on Downton Abbey. For a start, Lily James, who plays Juliet, played Lady Rose in Downton.
Jessica Brown Finley, who you may remember as Lady Sybil Branson, née Crawley, from Downton, plays the pivotal role of Elizabeth McKenna in Guernsey.
Matthew Good plays Juliet's agent and close friend in Guernsey and was Henry Talbot in seasons 5 and 6 of Downton.
But my favorite is Penelope Wilton. She played Isabel Crawley on Downton. And on Guernsey, she's really one of the emotional anchors of the film. She portrays Amelia, a character who is the matron of the club and someone whose losses are as big as her responsibilities. And Penelope is one of those actors who just turns in solid work.
She sure does. She played the British Prime Minister, Harriet Jones, remember on Doctor Who?
Yeah, and as campy as that show can be, she grounded that performance. You saw the weight of the role of Prime Minister, the decisions you have to make. She really has range. And I just have to say one more thing about her. If you haven't seen Afterlife, try and find that show. It's a Ricky Gervais show where Penelope plays a stranger who meets Ricky's character. Just one day they start a chat on a park bench. Remember those times? Okay. Anyway, it's sweet, it's sad, it's awful, it's funny. And okay, I'm digressing. But I did want to recommend that show.
Well, speaking of British comedy, you probably noticed that the part of Isola in Guernsey is played by Catherine Parkinson, who won multiple comedy awards for her role as Jen in The IT Crowd.
Oh, I love that show. So in Guernsey, she doesn't play Isola as a gag, but she gives the character of Isola this wonky, otherworld, wibbly wobbly way of speaking. Did you ever watch Bewitched? You know, the TV show?
Oh, of course. I loved that when I was a kid.
Doesn't Isola remind you of Aunt Clara? Aunt Clara was kind of flighty. She had this voice that was sort of one part warble and one part mouth of marbles.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, both characters, they have a lovable quality. You know, and actually, despite all the replacing and recasting of actors on Bewitched, when the actress who played Aunt Clara died in 1968, they didn't even try to replace her.
No, you couldn't. Okay, I guess we should get back to today's movie. But as long as we're talking about charming characters with a few years under their belt, I wanted to mention Tom Courtney, who plays Eben the Postmaster in Guernsey. He's been in quite a few films, but the 84-year-old actor's main experience has been on stage. And even though the large cast means not a lot of screen time per secondary character, he just possesses the screen when he's on it, and not just because he's the creator of the potato peel pie.
Yes, he's very good. Rounding out the main cast is Dutch actor Michiel Huisman as Dossie Adams, the man whose letter to Juliet sets the story into motion. He's definitely an actor to watch. You may already know him from Orphan Black, Game of Thrones, and now starring in the new series The Flight Attendant with Kaley Cuoco.
Before we move on to our ratings, if you're left wondering which of the events in the film really happened during the war and which are fiction, Visit Guernsey has put together a short and very moving featurette. It's just 10 minutes long, but it's very worth a watch, and you'll find the link on our webpage.
Time for ratings. Here at Island Watch, we give each watch two different ratings. First, our island rating, which answers the question, how much of an island feel do we get from this show? Gemma, how did you feel about Guernsey?
The images in the film range from skulking among hedgerows and along stone walls in the night to bright, wide-open vistas of the channel waters. You definitely get the feeling you're on the island and in that time and place. But after a little research, I found a surprise, and that is the film was not actually filmed on Guernsey. It was filmed on the North Devon coast in the southeast of England, and according to Studio Canal, they just found it too tricky to change the look of things on Guernsey because the island has modernized so much since the 1940s. But anyway, wherever those locations are, they definitely give me the island feels, so I'll say 5 out of 5, splashing in the surf. How about you, Dave?
Well, we certainly got a sense of what life was like on the island during that specific period in history. And as you said, there were some great scenes featuring beautiful scenery of the island, even if it wasn't really shot on Guernsey. The shore, the hills, the cliffs. So I'm giving it 5 out of 5 as well, splashing in the surf.
We also give each movie a star rating. So would you recommend this movie to a friend? Dave, what's your score for the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society?
This is definitely worth viewing. I like the narrative, the journey of discovery Juliet embarks on to learn about the book club and its members, as well as what she learns about herself. It's well written, acted, and executed. 4 out of 5.
This film, like I mentioned, has grown on me since I first saw it. While it's in many ways different from the book, there's no problem having artistic differences because it's a fictional interpretation of the time. The movie's very watchable, it's engrossing. It's 2 hours and it really goes by quickly, so I say 4 stars out of 5. Time for Find the Island. With so many islands in the world, it's challenging to choose which to visit. With this Find the Island segment, we're learning more about islands and even discovering islands that are new to us. Maybe it'll help you choose which to visit, either in person or on a future episode of Island Watch. Here's how to play. One of us gives a series of clues, and the other tries to work out what island it is. Best of all, you can play along at home. Today, it's Dave's turn to highlight an island.
This is not a single island. It's a group of islands. Well, actually, it's 2 group of islands, but they form 1 political unit. And the islands have a degree of self-government, but are not fully independent.
And that empty space you just heard was me having no clue.
All right, well, the scuba and snorkeling enthusiasts out there will like this one. In the waters near these islands, you'll find a large blue hole, as well as the largest coral reef system in the Western Hemisphere.
What's a large blue hole? What? Is that a thing?
A blue hole is a marine sinkhole.
I still don't have any clue.
Well, here's an obscure one for you. Back in February 1962, when astronaut John Glenn splashed down after his first space mission, Friendship 7, the first land that he and his capsule went to was one of these islands.
Okay, so I know it's on Earth. Now I have that confirmed. It's in the Western Hemisphere, and it's more than one island. No.
Here's another one for you. Remember the much-loved musician Prince? Well, he used to own a home there. And in 2019, his estate sold it for almost $11 million US.
So I'm going to apply some logic. I'm thinking Prince probably was in the market for a getaway. He was a busy, hard-working guy, so I'm thinking probably the Caribbean somewhere. Am I?
Yeah.
The general area?
That's the general area. Actually, this one might stir your memory banks. Over the last century, there have been a handful of proposals to have these islands join Canada.
Okay. No, I can't get it. It's back there in my mind, but I can't pull out the name.
It's the Turks and Caicos Islands. They're located southeast of the Bahamas. The islands are fairly close together, but they're situated in 2 clusters that have always been considered 2 groups, with the larger Caicos across a passage from the smaller Turks. There are 8 main islands and 22 smaller ones. The total land area is just 430 square kilometers, and the population is about 40,000.
Okay, you said they're not independent, right? So does that mean they're a crown dependency like Guernsey?
No, they have a different status than Guernsey. They form a British overseas territory, like the Falkland Islands or Gibraltar. But like them, the Turks and Caicos have self-government, with the UK overseeing foreign relations and defense. And a law passed in the UK in 2002 gave islanders full British citizenship.
It's a lot to keep track of, all these different levels of citizenship. That's a lot.
The islands are a popular tourist destination, and a number of celebrities have homes there. Prince's house, like I mentioned, it has 10 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms, and is over 10,000 square feet in size. For more regular people, the islands are popular with divers because of features like the Blue Hole and Coral Reef that I mentioned, as well as a number of shipwrecks.
Yeah, I'm pretty satisfied with just a beach and a drink. I guess that was probably also the thinking behind having Turks and Caicos join Canada, or the other way around. Anyway, having them join together. Now that you've jogged my memory, I do remember hearing about that idea somewhere back in time. Some government official talking about Canada needing its own Hawaii or something like that.
That's right. And the idea has resurfaced several times, starting as far back as 1917. Canadian Prime Minister Robert Borden advocated the idea, believing that Canada should be rewarded for participating in World War I by getting some Caribbean real estate. But the UK government rejected that. And then a Canadian MP tabled a private member's bill in 1974 to explore the possibility of a union. And the idea was raised again by other MPs in 1986 and 2004. And then when the island's premier visited Canada in 2014 to talk about trade and open a tourism office, a Canadian MP raised the idea yet again.
So what do the people of Turks and Caicos think about all this?
Well, polls indicated very high support for the idea in 1990, about 90% of the population. But a survey in 2003 indicated that it dropped to 60%. I mean, maybe it's because of the law in 2002 that extended UK citizenship. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's unlikely to happen. Maybe we should just enjoy Turks and Caicos as a place to visit when it's safe to travel again.
We do get around on this show, Guernsey and the Turks and Caicos, in one trip. We're headed back on board now and setting sail for another port. And we've even got a few clues to our next destination, so listen up. We're going to visit a massive archipelago, one that contains 26 countries within it.
One of the countries is a tiny 750 square kilometers and has 9 active volcanoes, plus a volcanically heated, steam-covered body of water called Boiling Lake.
Our final clue is one of the countries is known as the Spice Isle, and it's famous for nutmeg, cinnamon, ginger, cloves, allspice, bay leaves, and turmeric. They even have a tiny nutmeg on their flag.
To see if you've guessed the islands correctly, head to our website at islandwatchpodcast.com. Bonus, you'll also see what show we'll use to travel there.
In the meantime, tell your friends about us. Follow us at Island Watch Cast on Twitter.
Our email address is islandwatchpodcast@gmail.com.
And visit our website at islandwatchpodcast.com for show notes and more, like the answer to the big question, where does the good ship Island Watch sail to next?
Fair winds and calm seas. This has been a production of Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
Phosphine League.
The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.